Welcome to Book It, a bi-weekly podcast where we talk frankly about books.
My name is Jill.
And my name is Michael.
Catch us every other Wednesday talking about books, publishing, indie bookstores, chatting with authors, and so much more.
Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Book It Pod for more Book It content.
Want to read something you heard about on today's episode? Visit us at bookshop.org/shop/BookItPod.
So we're still figuring this out.
Clearly.
Yeah, but I think that's kind of like, I always want to be a work in progress.
Yeah, it is weird to be like halfway through your second season and feel like you're starting, I mean, it's not starting from scratch.
No, but it feels that way.
It does a little bit. Yeah. But I'm still excited to see you in person again.
Yes, round two.
Yeah, I know.
Your eyebrows still look amazing.
Thank you. And this time there was like 1,000% less panic attacks and stress sweating.
Which I wish I had been cognizant of, like, oh, she's going through it right now. Last time I was completely unaware. And at the end, you were like, that was really stressful. And I was like, oh, I was fine.
I couldn't tell if you were saying that to make me feel better.
No, I promise.
Or you really meant it.
I was just like so excited to be here.
Yeah.
That any amount of stress was just like going wildly over my head.
That's funny. Yeah. Because I like wanted it so much to go well that I think I worked myself up into a ball.
Totally. Yes. I think you had like a certain expectation and that expectation wasn't dragging your office desk into your living room to make it work.
It really wasn't.
But I'm really glad we did that.
I am excited to hear it because I feel like, I mean, it was the energy.
Oh.
You've heard it. Is it just manic the whole time?
Absolutely. Bouncing off the walls. But like the in the best way, like the whole time you can tell I'm like talking with a smile. Yeah. It's fun. I love doing this in person.
Me too.
And something else that I love is that, listener, we stay relatively organized here at Book It, and Jill really keeps us on top of that. She always has a Google Doc ready to go with like the subject of the episode. And if one of us has like a story to begin, never the story because we truly want to surprise the other person with what it is. But just like a reminder to that themselves to tell that story. And in this document, it says, fun intro story if needed, ringworm. And I'm just like a little worried. I'm wondering if we should wrap it up and I should get the hell out of here.
Yeah. So hopefully by the time everyone hears this story, it will have concluded, which is good because then no one can call Child Protective Services
Absolutely.
On me. Our older two kids just got back from a week of sleepaway camp.
And the first one since pre-COVID.
First post-COVID. And I was really on the fence about whether or not they were going to get to go. And then they got vaccinated, got their second dose. And it was literally like 2 days to spare on being fully ready to go. So the timing worked out perfect. But before they left, Pippa had, she had this little spot on her forehead. And I thought it was kind of an aggressively red zit. And I was like, well, you know, just put some stuff on it. And we put a little, one of those little circle patches on it.
Right.
You know, it'll clear up while you're gone. She was like, well, annoyed, but okay. And she came back and it was aggressively red and larger. And I was like, that's really weird. But, you know, thing I learned when kids come home from camp, every single thing that went to camp, including them, comes back with this smell that I can't describe, but absolutely should be explored as like a biological weapon.
It's like a smell you can feel.
Yeah. Yes. Those are the words I needed. I can't even.
Oh my gosh.
And I washed literally every single thing that went. And I was really caught up in like getting that unpacked and getting everything put away and getting everything washed because everything smelled.
Oh.
And last night, we were sitting on the couch. And, you know, she's been back. She got back on Sunday, and now it's Tuesday. So Monday night, we're sitting on the couch, and Mark says to her, did you try to use a curling iron while you were gone? Thinking like, you know, she was off with a bunch of other girls, and maybe they were like doing something. He was like, or straightener, or did you use something hot? Like, did you burn yourself? It's okay.
Right.
Like, things happen at camp. Everything's fine. Like, but tell us what. And she's like, no, I didn't do anything.
Right.
I'm like, does it itch? Does it hurt? No. I'm like, okay. And then she goes to bed and Mark and I are talking. And I was like, it's so weird. It's like a perfectly round circle. What in the world could it possibly be?
It's on her forehead?
It's on her forehead. And we're just like, I don't know. I mean, I guess we'll call the doctor's office tomorrow. So Mark took a picture of it, uploads it to the portal at the doctor's office this morning. And they email us back and say, yeah, that's ringworm. And I was like, where in the world would she have gotten ringworm? Right. Which is how we found out one of our foster cats has ringworm. Oh,
my God. No.
Yes.
Where is the cat?
It's been quarantined.
My gosh, we just got out of quarantine. This poor cat needs to be quarantined now.
Yes, and they have to like look at it under a black light. It's a whole thing. But yeah, so our child got ringworm from our foster cat. None of us put it together. We sent her to a week at sleepaway camp with it. Yeah. Mother of the year right here.
Absolutely. Yes. You at least noticed it.
Yes. And then didn't do anything about it for 2 whole days.
Well, you thought it was a zit.
I really did. At first, it really, really looked like a zit. And you know, you just want to walk this fine line when you're like soon to be teenager has
yes, what exactly. appears yes.
to be a giant zit.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds weird, but in my efforts to be a kind and concerned parent,
yeah.
I was actually not a great
disregarding
parent.
Ringworm. Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, you know.
Welcome to Book It. Jill and I don't have ringworm.
Yeah, you know, at least one of my kids has ringworm. Yeah. Yeah. Please don't call Child Protective Services.
Because they don't anymore. Like, as you're listening to this, it's been taken care of.
So, yeah, I mean, honestly, does it deliver? I feel like, did it live up to your expectations?
Yes, because it just had a twist ending. And it's funny that you're saying this because I forget who I was talking to, but we were just talking about...
Ringworm?
No. Ringworm's a hot topic right now. That CRT.
I feel like the whole thing was confused. I was like, I feel like... The wrestling team gets ringworm. Exactly. Like, that's literally the only concept I have for it.
Right. So that's what my friends and I were talking about, lice and how kids just get lice yeah. so easily. So this, like, falls into, like, where my brain's at right now. And
yes.
It's disgusting. And thank God we're adults sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In a complete 180, these things could not be further apart from
Absolutely.
One another.
Absolutely. Uh-huh.
You have a new day job.
Oh, I do. Yeah. Fanfare music.
I know.
producer, please. This will actually be the first time she's heard that news, too.
Oh, that's exciting. Yeah. Do you want to tell us about it or no?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah,
tell us about it.
I am so excited about this job. I guess by the time you're listening to this, I'll have started. I'm going to be a content editor for Writer's Digest.
So
we love Writer's Digest here on Book It. They actually promoted a couple of our episodes back at the beginning of the second season when Jessica Strasser was on. They shared that episode around, and I've just had a lovely little professional friendship with the editor-in-chief, and this job opened up, and I jumped at it, and I just can't wait. I can't wait. I can't wait.
I'm really excited.
Thanks, oh my. Yeah, I'm really excited. And they are, the editor, Amy, listens to this podcast, so like, thank
Hi,
you
Amy.
For employing me. go subscribe, Writer's Digest. Yeah. And so like I'll have updates once it actually gets started. For now, I'm just really excited.
I love it. I think that's really, you're grinning ear to ear and it's just making me so happy.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. I'm pleased. And Jill has news. Her daughter has written. No, I'm just kidding. Equal weight.
Oh, we are a multitude. Oh my goodness. So it's actually a perfect setup for today's episode. I sent it to Michael and I said, the one where we read chill books.
Yes.
Because we need that.
Listen to this energy. We need to chill out.
We need some nice, not sad
yes.
reading that does not involve parasites. Of any kind.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think it's funny because we really took to heart our 2021 goals, which was to read challenging work.
Yeah.
And I'm good for a minute.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. We went on we blazed quite a trail.
Yes.
Through really tough subject matter and big, deep books.
Yeah.
And this was fun.
So fun. And because it made me realize in preparing for this episode, since the 2021 books have been knockouts, every book we've read this year I've loved.
Yes.
That I need to read more fun and chill books from 2021. Otherwise, my list from 2021 best of at the end of the year is going to tell a story about me that I don't really want, which is that I only read really dense literary fiction in one vein. And that other kinds of books are just as good.
Yes. Well, and that's kind of what I was rolling around when we were planning this.
Yeah.
And so here's my first question. Like, what is a chill book? And like, is it different for you from like a comfort read or a book or a beach read? Like, what itch is it scratching for you?
Oh, gosh. Okay. So I think
the itch isn't ringworm.
Yeah. I have to take a picture and send it to my doctor in the morning. Very likely ringworm. What is a chill book? I think sometimes they do intersect. And I think that for me, a lot of it is about like how a book ultimately makes me feel regardless of its intentions necessarily. Mm-hmm. A book came to mind that I'm not sharing as my roundup, so I'll share it now, is a book called French Exit, which I've talked about on this podcast before. And it's chill to me because it made me laugh so hard.
Yeah.
It was so clever. And just really funny, but it's a dark comedy. I mean, it goes dark. But for me, that was very chill, and it was absolute escapism, and I loved it for that. But I do think sometimes they intersect with what is quote unquote a beach read or a guilty pleasure. Like we've talked endlessly about How to Find Love in a Bookshop on this podcast, and that is absolutely a chill book for me.
Yes, agreed.
Yeah, so I think it just depends on what kind of chill I need. And then I grab that kind of book. What about you?
Yeah, I think chill books for me are like a portal into another world. I don't know, it's kind of an escape.
Right.
Highly accessible, easy to read. And I think sometimes people call them beach reads, and it's almost a derogatory term that gets slapped on books that have mass appeal and are, you know, just accessible to a lot of people. And they're not perceived as being intellectually stimulating or complex.
Right.
And I sort of hate that. I mean, all of the books that I brought for today are ones that I read for pleasure, you know, like mostly at the pool. I really enjoyed them. You could slap any of these labels on them. But they also like delved into some really challenging topics.
Right.
And it's sort of like this term's not used a lot anymore, but they used to say like women's fiction. Yep. And I feel, you know, that makes me cringe. Right. And I feel like women's fiction was so overtly like dripping in these sexist assumptions that we have inserted terms like beach reads or comfort feels because they're not overtly sexist, but it's really the same thing.
Absolutely. And I think it comes back to, there is something like oddly misogynistic about all of it. Like if you would recommend a book to a certain person, they'd be like, well, that's just a beach read. And it's like, okay, what do you mean by that?
Yeah.
Gentlemen, because are you considering that like a chick book? Cause you're just going to go pick like a World War II, like boring history novel. Like, sorry. We love you, World War II.
Your example is perfect. When I worked at the public library, we had two book groups. A fiction book group that was comprised entirely of women. Mm-hmm. And then my boomers. We had a second book group that called themselves the Grumpy Old Men.
Ugh.
And they were. But they only read nonfiction. And it was like, oh no, we read history.
Yes.
And I'm like, oh, okay.
Yes. Neat.
Good for you.
I'm living history. So
they read World War II books all the time.
Yes, because you're afraid to pick up a beach read because it looks like chiclet. But none of those, these are not real things. This is not reality.
No, it's just, and I feel like it goes two ways. There are people who are like, oh, I only read nonfiction.
Right.
And you're like, okay, good for you.
Right.
And then there are the gatekeepers who are like, I only read literary fiction.
Yes, yes.
And I feel like just fuck all of them.
Yes.
I just want to read.
Absolutely. Fuck all of them. Yes. That's what we're going to title this episode. And then everyone's going to stop listening. I totally hear you. Like, I don't get it. And I say that as like having totally fallen into that trap before. Like I can't pretend I'm this perfect person who's always been like unafraid to read something because of how it made me look. Like Of course I have, especially in adolescence when you're like really want to read Nicholas Sparks' The Notebook, you're not gonna.
Yeah.
Cuz you're a closeted 13-year-old boy. And then you go through college, and especially for me cuz I was in creative writing, like there was an emphasis exclusively on literary fiction.
Yeah.
And so that was like all I read, and unintentionally was considering everything else just like fun, light fare for the summer.
Yeah.
And took me graduating and choosing my own books to realize like, oh, I've just been wrong. Like I haven't given these books the time of day accidentally all of the time, because literary fiction is like what the goal should be. Yeah. And it just isn't. It doesn't have to be. And to your point, like a lot of the books that I read this year that are beach reads, quote unquote, do not shy away from really intense and challenging subject matters.
Yeah, same. I mean, I think we each got three books to recommend for today's episode. And I feel like every single one of mine is fun and deals with powerful, complex subject.
It's like the same people who like won't pick up a beach read because it's a beach read are the same people who think they've aged out of reading middle grade.
Yes.
It's like, no, read middle grade. Like they're talking about stuff that's happening today in ways that a lot of adult books aren't, because it's happening to kids.
Yeah.
It's like, read a beach read.
I agree.
Thanks. Subscribe,
thanks
comment.
Thanks for coming to our TED Talk.
Our joint TED Talk, that would just be chaos.
Can you imagine?
I can too.
There would be so many sidebars. It'd be yes. 5 hours long. Like, I think those TED Talks are supposed to only be like 20 minutes or something. No. Yeah. I'd be like, no, I'm sorry. We need 3 hours. Yeah.
It would just be called Sidebar.
Yeah. Yes. Sidebar. All the books I brought today and everything I quote unquote read this month. Audiobooks.
No way.
Yes.
I knew you were reading a lot of them or listening to a lot of them.
Yeah.
Same thing. Sorry, I didn't mean to differentiate.
I don't think there's a difference. I'm also going to, you know, that'll be a hill I die on. I've been driving the kids around a lot and, you know, I'm not like working full time anymore. So we just have a sitter one day a week. And so I'm just taxi driving, you know, the kids' Uber, and waiting for them to finish practices or whatever, because we keep them busy in the summer. And it's been really delightful.
Wow.
Yeah.
You do it through Libro FM, right?
I do Libro FM. I love it. You can, when you buy an audiobook, it's you know, just like Audible, except when you buy an audiobook, it's like you're buying it from an independent bookstore.
Which is like A+.
Oh, absolutely. Jeff Bezos does not need my audiobook money.
No, he's going to Mars. He's fine.
He's good. But it's
just really don't kill Bill Gates.
It's really fun. I mean, I got the membership where you get like one credit a month for $14.99. But then after that, any book you buy is 30% off. And they have a sales section. I downloaded one book this week for like $4.99.
This is not sponsored.
It's not. I mean, that's the thing. I'm also going to post about it on Instagram this week. And it's one of those things where I'm like, this is not a commercial, but also kind of, I mean, I am loving it.
I'm so glad to hear this. I haven't really tackled audiobooks in a while.
Yeah.
Because I get really distracted easily if I'm listening.
Yes. That is when it – so I recorded our Instagram video for this week this morning. And the distraction thing is huge.
Yeah.
And I really found like I have to pair it with the right activity. I can't do it while I'm trying to work.
Okay.
But all of those mundane things that you have to do, like folding laundry and, you know, loading the dishwasher and like driving anywhere, cleaning the house.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, it makes all of those things more enjoyable.
Yeah. Because what am I doing otherwise? Just like zoning out.
Right.
Yeah. It's for life's in-betweens.
Yeah. I can zone out to an audiobook. Yeah. And I figured out, I got this info from Twitter. I did not think of it myself. You can adjust the pace that the narrator reads at. And for some reason, like someone was like, this was like the make or break for me. And I was like, well, maybe I should try it because I'd listened to like the first hour of a book and I was like, oh, I need this person to read faster.
Wow.
It's really like, I listen at like 1.3.
That makes sense to me because like, it's also like we read at different speeds.
Yeah.
Yeah. You needed it to be a little bit faster.
Yeah. And the different narrators all kind of read at a different speed. So I mean, right. Sometimes it's more and sometimes it's less.
Yeah.
But that also helped keep me engaged. And I liked it too. We really should get Libro FM to sponsor us. Yeah,
please.
They have really nice selection lists to pick from. Like, wow. If you're not sure what you want, I don't know. Anyway, so all my books today I did on audio.
Oh, I love hearing that. What would you say, what was the biggest difference in listening to each of them?
At first, because you know I'm a person who I dog ear the pages when I like something.
Sure,
I
will right.
write in the book, which I know drives you crazy. And so at first that was really hard. And I was like, oh, I need a piece of paper. Oh, I need to write this down. And then I'm going to have to keep track of it until we talk about this book. And I was super annoyed. And it was that first one I hadn't figured out the the narration pace yet. And then I Googled it. There's this built-in function where you can just like take notes in certain spots of the book.
So they've thought of everything.
Yes. And so I was like, oh my God, this is perfect. So when I was preparing my notes for today, I just went through and looked like what I had tagged in the audiobook.
Why do we even read anymore? physical books.
Because those are awesome.
I'm just kidding. Yeah.
Yeah.
We love you, no, Libro FM.
It's been amazing.
I need to wrap my brain around a different way to do it. Like, I think you're right. I need to do it when I'm doing things that I don't have to like use my brain. Because I think the last time I tried, I was working.
Yeah.
And I just realized like, I haven't been listening. Like, I don't know what I just
listened. It's been an hour and I have no idea what's going on.
Exactly. I think I'll have to do it when I'm cleaning the house or like even like running. Cause like,
oh yeah,
I get so tired of like trying to pick a playlist.
Yes.
That I think listening to a book while I run would be a great idea.
Yes. Yeah. I have to say I was at the end of, I was had like 35 minutes left in one of my books and I purposefully went for a walk.
Perfect. Oh my gosh. It's getting you out.
Yes.
Amazing.
I was like, I just have to finish this. Like
that is genius.
Gotten to the point where I can't put it down.
So I say like, I should do it when I'm running, which is to assume that I'm running at all, which is a lie. So like, maybe it'll get me back into running.
It is one more thing you can do. Remember that day you texted me and told me you were getting ready to work out?
Yes.
But then like that was
the workout.
That was the workout.
Uh-huh.
You could add this to your getting to ready to work out routine.
To my pretend workouts. I love it.
Yes.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome. All right, let's get into the books. What do you have for us?
Well, I'm going to start with one because we were talking about like beach reads and things that get kind of an unfair genre label that deals with really like genuinely thoughtful subject matters while also being like kind of light and hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
I'm starting with a book that I'm not quite finished yet with, but we both love. It's called The Gunkle.
I'm pretty sure Stephen Rowley might think that we're stalking him.
Well, because we are.
Yeah.
and just a very brief synopsis, because I am interested in Jill's perspective having finished it. I'm only like 150 pages in. The story is about an actor named Patrick living in Palm Springs, who is on a hit sitcom and hasn't worked since it finished a couple of years ago. His best friend from college married his brother.
Yes.
And has passed away from an illness that she dealt with for a couple of years. His brother is dealing with his own health crisis. And because of that, has asked Patrick to take in his niece and nephew. And Patrick is really against it at first, adamant that it doesn't happen, that he's not the right person for it. And decides kind of in a not the best motives to like one up someone in his life. Like, you know what? Fine, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
And they go with him to Palm Springs and start staying with him. And part of what he wants to do for them is to help them understand their own grief.
Yeah.
And help them understand what Sarah, his best friend, meant to him. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think they really understand that yet, that their relationship as friends, and also like what friendship relationships can do for people. Mm-hmm. That is the basic plot. I am about, like I said, 150 pages into it, and I have laughed a lot.
Yeah.
And new sweetness was coming, because there have been like little like snippets of sweetness throughout. And I just got to a point where I've kind of like noticed, I think even before the main character does, his intentions are so honorable and he's lovely with them.
Yeah.
And that like surprising way that kids are teaching him something about himself and his own grief outside of this main story's grief. Mm-hmm. And just conversations about, again, what it's like to be a gay person in their 40s, dealing with what that means for him and the community at large. And something just happened that I texted Jill this morning that was so sweet and so emotional.
Yeah.
That I was, and it hit me like a ton of bricks. Like it had just been laugh out loud funny. And then it went directly into this really touching moment that like, I literally couldn't like open my mouth and talk because I was getting so choked up about it. But it's not like jarring. The tone is continuous. Like he never breaks from the same tone. So it's not like suddenly I'm crying. Like, why am I crying? It just, he balances that so well, that like sweet, funny.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those books where, I mean, again, I've been listening at the pool. So I'm like sitting there with my headphones on and people are looking because like I just start laughing.
Sure.
Because it is that funny.
Yes.
And then very organically, like it never feels like a plot device. I never feel walked into it or tricked into it. But an emotional or deeper part will come up and you're just like, whoa. And I just feel like Stephen Rowley is incredibly talented in that way. I did the audiobook.
Right. Oh, and he reads it, doesn't he?
Yeah, he reads it. After I posted about it and mentioned that I really liked their narration, he sent us a DM and said that he had been nervous because it was his first time narrating. Mm. You cannot tell.
Really?
He captured, in the same way that he writes the funny parts and the moving parts so beautifully, they just roll out in this way that you just feel touched and you feel like you're part of it. I was surprised that it was his first go at narration. Mm. And I feel like he does a good job at voicing both the grown-ups and the kids, which I think is a real hard balance
to do, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just like thinking about the way that the character navigates not always knowing what to do with them and how to communicate with them, but like totally acing it in a way that doesn't not make sense. Like there's a scene where I think it's like maybe their first morning in Palm Springs or one of the first mornings. He's trying to get them to go out to the pool and be really excited about it. And Grant's stoked. And Maisie just kind of is not into it, but isn't saying why.
Yeah.
And he kind of isn't going to press it because he just thinks like, oh, this is having kids. This is what it's like. And then Grant's finally like, oh, I promised her I wouldn't say anything. And he says like, well, just tell me. I forget how he says it. But basically, she doesn't like the swimsuit that her dad picked for her. She doesn't like wearing girl swimsuits.
Yeah.
And instead of preaching to her anything, he just shows her what he likes to wear.
Yeah.
And he says, like, this is what I like to wear. It might look like a dress, but I like it. And I feel comfortable in it. Do you not feel comfortable in your bathing suit? We will pick you one that you feel comfortable in. And it just felt like really natural and like it was so lovely. Because it didn't feel preachy. It just felt natural and real.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to interview Stephen Rowley and I want to be wearing a caftan while I'm doing it.
Absolutely.
Group caftans.
Yeah. Wow.
Not like we're sharing one. Just I hear like you. We're all wearing one. That would be a different kind of episode. Sidebar. Yeah, no, this book really touched me deeply.
Yeah.
I felt like I really appreciated that he took the kids' grief seriously.
Absolutely.
It wasn't like they've come to Palm Springs for the summer. It's going to be one circus fun day after another.
Or a nightmare. Like, it was not one or the other.
Right.
Yeah.
It was like, they have grief. I have grief. We're going to be together and work on our grief.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also really funny. It's such a weird thing to say, this super funny, hilarious book. It's also about
grief.
Made
me cry really hard. Yeah. In the best way, like a good cry. And so it's like, when we're talking about chill reads and beach reads, like, this is why you shouldn't avoid them, because
yeah,
I feel fine. Like, reading it,
yeah.
It's not so heavy that I need to like walk away and watch like 10 hours of the crappiest reality television. But it's also not like just cotton candy where you eat it and you immediately forget about it. It is legitimate, important writing.
I am telling you, he goes on this rant in several spots about sunscreen.
Oh, yes.
And I was like, yes! Wrestling children into sunscreen is torture. It is the worst. And the mineral-based sunscreen, it's all white, and we're trying to do it because it's good for coral.
Right.
And you're like, I want to do it because it's the right thing to do. But man, that stuff does not absorb, and it gets everywhere, and it stains the seats in your car. There is nothing good about sunscreen except the part where you don't get skin cancer. And I really liked seeing that in fiction.
Loved it. She loved it. If the rest of the book sucked, it wouldn't have mattered because that was in there.
You might not be wrong there.
I find it so endearing and touching when like kids choose names for adults. Like my niece calls my dad Bobo because their cat's name's Bo, and he just answers to it now. And I think it's so sweet. And so that, like, they just called him Gup, yeah. And his Uncle Jack. Like, he lies about who's at the door once, and she just picks up on it. And I just think it's so sweet and endearing and real to life that like, kids are going to call you what they want, and that's now your name.
Yes. Yeah. And before you have a kid, you know, the grandparents all get all worked up
because
they all want to pick their own names, and it's a whole thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love it. We teased Mark's dad endlessly for a really long time. He is just kind of a formal person by nature. Mm. And at first said he was going to be referred to as grandfather.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, because I'm me. Uh-huh. I was like in Heidi?
Oh, my God.
Because that's the only reference I had for someone calling named someone grandfather. Which, of course, no toddler can say, so that he's just called Grandpa now.
Good.
But yeah, kids are going to choose the name. And that was so authentic.
Yes.
That they call him Gup.
It's sweet.
Gay Uncle Patrick.
Yes, I think it's really sweet. Yeah. Anyway, that's my first one. I'm not quite done with it yet, but I'm loving it.
Yeah.
Hit me with one.
In that same similar vein where it's sort of a beach / vacation read, I did The People We Meet on Vacation by Emily Henry.
Oh, local.
Yeah. Shout out to Emily. I did not know she was also from Cincinnati.
Yeah.
So Michael and I are dying to talk to her now.
Wink, wink.
So here's the setup. So for most of the year, Poppy and Alex live apart. She's in New York City and he's in suburban Ohio. But every summer for the past decade, they have taken a week of vacation together until 2 years ago. And all you know is that they ruined it, is like how it's referred to. And they haven't spoken to each other since.
Oh.
And the narrative is told in two timelines, present day, where Poppy is stuck in this rut. She has like her dream job working for this travel magazine, and she lives in New York City, and she gets to go on these amazing trips. But she just doesn't feel fulfilled by it.
Hmm.
And so she reaches back out to Patrick and like texts them and invites him on like one last trip. Can we save our friendship? But she doesn't tell him that's what the invite is about. She just invites him.
Okay.
And then the other timeline is recounting the 10 trips.
Oh, wow.
Previous.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And I really liked, you know, it's our buzzword, how genuine Poppy and Alex were. You know, my favorite word. But I saw so much of Mark and I
wow.
in their relationship. Like, Alex loves cargo shorts. And he has just like this very straight-laced approach to life and like very definite opinions and
okay.
like ways he wants to do things and what he wants his life to look like. And my Mark is very much like that and also enjoys not just cargo shorts, but cargo pants.
Oh, boy.
And we call them daddy pants. You know, they're made out of those that like quick dry material. It's a whole thing.
Wow.
So he's definitely got like an Alex vibe. And I feel more like the Poppy in our relationship, like an adventurer or a risk taker. And so much of the book is how you can be different.
And love each other.
And love each other. Yeah. And I picked this up thinking it was like a romance book and it's a friends to love trope. And to be clear, it is that.
Yeah.
But it does that while also being kind of complex and deep and engaging. And here is the thing I'm kind of percolating on after reading it. I'm not a particularly sentimental person.
Same.
I don't believe in soulmates or true love. But I have a serious soft spot for this kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked about my obsession with Hallmark movies, and I loved that so much of this book was about figuring out how they could compromise to find love and to support one another. And that even if it didn't work out, their friendship was so deeply meaningful to each other. And that just really, I don't know, melted my cold black heart that doesn't believe in true love. but I really enjoyed it. And I loved that their friendship's not perfect.
Sure.
And they both are at fault for things falling apart in different ways. And at various points along the timeline, they love each other and mm-hmm. think they might want to be together,
mm-hmm.
but also know that that's not the right thing for the other person.
Wow.
And, you know, I think that is like its own kind of love.
Oh, yes. It's selfless.
Yeah. Like, this is just not going – as much as we want to be together – We should not. And you can be the person that you're meant to be
yeah.
if we're not together.
Right, right. I'm really fascinated by this dual timeline. So are you the whole time a little bit like, I'm going to find out what happened?
Yes.
Is it a big reveal?
Yes and no. You're expecting it to be this huge thing.
Right.
And I don't know about everybody else, but I kind of thought it's when she just called, you know, everything fell apart in Croatia. They were on the trip to Croatia.
Okay.
And I kind of thought like, oh man, they got drunk and had sex. And then they were both like, oh my God.
Made a mistake.
Like, that's what I'm thinking the whole time.
Okay.
Spoiler alert, that's not what happens.
Okay.
I won't tell you what does. But yeah, like it's like a turning point more than a...
incident.
Yes.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which also feels real.
Yes. Very much.
I think that... I have only heard good things about the people we meet on vacation. I have also only heard good things about Beach Read, which is her other book.
Yeah.
I think it came out like a year before.
Yes.
I like that it's about multitudes of a relationship.
Yeah.
It's not just about whether or not they're being romantic. It's about their friendship too.
Yeah.
And I am a sucker for friendship stories. And I like complicated friendship stories because friendships are complicated.
Yes, especially lasting ones.
Yes,
I mean,
long
this is a
ones.
Decade of friendship.
Right.
And, you know, everybody changes.
Yes.
And you move apart from whatever initially brought you together. And having a deep and treasured friendship that extends beyond that.
So, like, what about this would you say is chill or comfort? And how do you relate it to the Beach Read genre as like a good thing and a bad thing.
Yeah. So like Gunko, you know, it's marketed. Like,
yeah.
It's a beach tree.
It's also a gorgeous cover. And by the way, I can't believe we didn't say this. The Gunko has a stunning cover as well.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. The cover on the Gunko. Yeah. Yes. It's, you know, it's got a bright cover. It's being marketed as a beach read. And like the Gunkle, there are laugh out loud funny parts.
Okay.
And it's really charming.
Okay.
And it's got that escapism quality. Like, who doesn't want to be a travel writer that lives in New York City?
Very true. Yes. The minute you said that as her dream job, I was like, what is she complaining about?
Exactly. Exactly. And so for me, like, it was that, like, just kind of this, you escape into this world where, like, can you imagine this being your setup and not being happy?
Yeah, right.
Like,
but then I'm sure it offers you some perspective then.
Yeah, yeah. It really does. Because I think there's elements of that in everything we do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And then it comes around and you're like, but it's not just this, it's not a Hallmark movie book.
Mm. No offense to those either.
Right. There are genuine messy parts and you root for them while also not knowing what you want for them.
Mm. Wow.
You know, like,
yes.
do I think, you know, the whole time I'm like, maybe they shouldn't be together. Like, so yeah. And I liked that aspect of it too. Yeah. Like, it wasn't just predetermined.
Oh, so it's like stakes that aren't necessarily high but tangible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because relationship stakes are high.
I am really hoping we get a chance.
Oh, it's gonna happen. We've spoken that into existence before. It's happening now.
I hope so.
Emily Henry.
Call us.
Yeah. You've got our number. It's 51. I'm just kidding.
It's a moment of sheer panic. Please literally do not say my phone Jill's number out eyes loud.
Got so big.
What else do you have?
So I've got one that's going to be super hard to describe. Spoiler alert, I'm terrible at describing books.
I love that.
But it's Postcards from the Edge by Carrie Fisher, who, like, you'll know from Star Wars. And she's also just a really funny writer. And she spent a lot of her time in her career just writing really funny books. And her first book, it's, like I said, Postcards from the Edge. It's a semi-autobiographical novel centering around an actress named Suzanne Vail as she tries to put her life together after her overdose. Mm-hmm. And it's broken up into five different parts. Some of it is written in the form of postcards, and other parts are written in first-person narrative excerpts from her journal. Some of it alternates another perspective from someone named Alex, who's another addict in the same clinic that she's in. And the last three sections are traditional third-person narrative. And the last part details the first time she makes a movie. Mm. And that is sort of to give you an idea as to, like, why this happened to her. Because it's like, oh, this is a terrible industry, especially for women. And she has to put up with a lot of stuff and clearly deals with it with comedy.
Yeah.
So, like I said, I don't read a lot of light. This doesn't sound light, right? Like,
sounds a little intense.
Yeah, but it's Carrie Fisher's incredible wit that she was known for.
Yeah.
Her dry humor, her dark comedy. And in that is a lot of truth. I think that it takes a really specific, strong person to be able to take something like this and make it as funny as she does, as dry and witty as she does. Like, there's a line that I put in my notes. I think it might even be the opening line, but I can't remember. But the quote is, "Maybe I shouldn't have given the guy who pumped my stomach my phone number, but who cares? My life is over anyway."
Like, oh, I love that.
Do you see what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's real and hilarious because sometimes the worst things that happen to us are also kind of funny.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, I have wanted to read this book for a while and just have never gotten around to it.
Yeah.
But I loved, like, her interviews when they were doing this latest round of Star Wars movies.
Yeah.
Because now we're at a place where we could talk about her and the gold bikini and why it's weirdly problematic,
yes.
You know, like, and the issues about it. And she's such a witty and intelligent feminist.
Yes.
And you don't necessarily know that unless you dig a little bit deeper.
Yes. And that the the format of this book was such a surprise that it wasn't just your standard third person or first person narrative or omniscient narrative. Like, it was very experimental in a way that almost felt like stand-up comedy. Like, it was so refreshing to read because I didn't expect that at all. Like, I expected it to be funny. I expected it to be thoughtful. I expected, yeah, like, feminism and unbelievable wit. But she was also just has clearly had a lot of fun as a writer. Like, she wrote it non-linearly in different forms. That is unusual.
Yeah.
Especially for when she wrote it. And I found it so refreshing as well. And I think what makes it chill or, like, maybe people forget to read it is because I think people, when an actor or an actress, like, writes a book, I think some people just, like, think it's a passion project, not very good. Like, yeah, they just wanted to do this because they have the privilege to. Sure, that happens a lot.
Yeah.
There are a lot of crappy books written by amazing actors. But she is a good writer. Like, she's so clever. And it was just like I said, like, laugh out loud funny. I'd be reading it in bed laughing because it just was so dry and like almost incredulous laughing that, like, I can't believe she's able to write these sentences about this drug addiction overdose.
Yeah.
I loved it. But I also love Carrie Fisher so much. So I'm a little bit biased.
Yeah. No, I really like her. And I will admit, this has been this ongoing conversation in my marriage. Like, I had not seen the first two Star Wars movies when Mark and I got married.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, I had seen Return of the Jedi because, like, my cousins who were boys were in town, mm-hmm, and they wanted to see it.
Like, in theaters?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so I was like, oh, God, guess we're doing that today. Let's go see, yeah, Star Wars. And I then hadn't seen it again since, you know, I was a child.
Right.
So I didn't even really remember much of it beyond the Ewoks.
Okay.
And Carrie Fisher's hair. So I just didn't really know much about her. Mark loves Star Wars in the way that, you know, Gen X guys do.
My husband also is, his favorite movies are Star Wars.
Yes. And so I just really enjoyed this latest round of press that they did.
Yeah.
Because you really got to see more of, I think, who she authentically was.
Actually is, right.
And she was really forthcoming about her addiction and was like, look, this happened. It's a hot mess. It's a funny story.
Yes.
But also, I'm a person who struggles with this. Yes. And this is my path.
Especially, I love that you're saying that, because even in this new round of interviews and publicity, she got to talk about how certain things just haven't changed. Like, she was, mm-hmm, I don't want to say forced, but they deeply encouraged her to lose weight for the new trilogy. And even people that I know were like, why is she complaining about that? She gained weight. And it's like, do you see the problem? Like,
yeah,
no one else was asked to do this. Like, yeah, this is a problem. And I like that she feels the freedom to tell us that now.
Mm-hmm.
That is also why I think her books are so good, because she got to do whatever she wanted. Like, nobody, yeah, was telling her, I can't say this. And the books really reflect that. Yeah, I think you'd really like it. It's fun to read.
My next one is Malibu Rising by Taylor Jenkins Reid. And it is, when you hear the plot, you're going to be like, yes, that is for sure a beach read. But hang with me. So it is set at the end of the summer of 1983.
Okay.
It's the day of Anina Riva's annual end of the summer party, and everybody's like really hot with anticipation. It's the biggest party of the summer. Tons of A-list people are there. She is a surfer and supermodel, and her brother is also like a championship competitive surfer. And then her other brother is like a surf photographer who's like really widely known. And then there's like her up and coming, younger sister, Kit. And together, they're kind of this source of fascination in Malibu. Because they're the offspring of a famous singer, okay, Nick Riva. And then all in their own right, they have these kind of big outlandish lives. And Nina has been recently very publicly dumped by her tennis star husband.
Mm.
And so she's not really looking forward to this, but it's an annual tradition. They've done it every year, so they're going to have it. So it's one of those books where everyone has a secret, which is, again, like, I adore this kind of setup, books, movie, literally anything. If you've got a big family and everyone has a secret, I'm there.
Yeah.
And so I keep seeing it recommended as a summer book or a beach read, which I get. It definitely has those summer vibes. Yeah. But it's also a story of functional and dysfunctional relationships and families kind of all wrapped up in this party setting. There's going to be a party. The secrets are going to be revealed. It's going to be drama.
Right.
And she just takes it to another level. I don't know. It's like infused with something. There's something about her characters or her writing. There's like this intangible quality where it is more than the sum of its parts.
Mm.
And it drew me in. It kept me riveted from beginning to end. It's the book I went and took a walk for so I could listen to the end. So I was struck by how much I connected with different characters at different points in the book. And they all are like searching for love and beyond and belonging.
Yeah.
But there's this pressure to set aside your passion for familial obligations. It really explores this urge to love someone who can't be there for you when you most need it.
Wow.
I mean, I don't know. It just all cut me really, really deep. Like the people we meet on vacation, it's also told in alternating timelines. So on one hand, you're at the day of the party and those present day chapters are hour by hour leading up to the party and then to the end.
And hour by hour?
Yes.
Wow.
And then the alternating chapters are following their life up to that point. On the surface, there's nothing that is immediately special about the story. You think it's going to be this fluffy, you buy into the veneer, I guess. Right. But it's also a deep cut into sibling relationships and the responsibility that we have, right or wrong, to our families or our siblings, even when it's unequal or possibly even unfair.
Mm.
And it's a powerful story of taking a hold of your life for yourself.
Wow.
It's definitely a book that I would recommend over and over again. It's so much more than you think it's going to be, but it's also really fun.
Which is like, I think exactly what why people should pick up chill books that seem like beach reads, because it's like probably always going to be more than what you think it is.
Yeah. I mean, it's got this whole, you go through this Hollywood party, like the whole party from start to finish, and it's crazy, and it's the 80s, and there's like Coke being passed around on waiter trays, and people acting in all kinds of ways. I mean, it's wild.
Yes.
And so that aspect is just like fun and ridiculous and soapy and drama.
Yeah.
But then it's also this just whole thing about, you know, the oldest sibling has basically raised her other siblings and they've all got something going on that they've put to the side because for them, their unit is more important than any of them individually. But they've all arrived at this point in life where that's not functional for them anymore.
Sure.
So I really liked it.
See, like these descriptions are like not one sentence. Like these are such like thoughtful, complicated narratives. And I think that this is brand new, right?
Yes. I think it just came out like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. And I honestly haven't heard much about it. And I'm interested in sort of like exploring the offspring of people who were already famous and how that must be really hard and confusing and probably makes it feel like easy to tell yourself that nothing I do is because I'm good at it. It's because of who I am.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. Ah, I got to read this.
Yeah, I definitely, it's one of those things where like, I want you to read this book, but I actually want you to read my next book more.
Ah.
But you go next.
Okay, so my next one is a book that I really want to read, but I haven't yet because I don't read a lot of light stuff and I need to get better at that. And that's what the goal here is. It's called The Windfall by Diksha Basu. The cover's gorgeous. It came out a couple years ago and I had never heard of it.
I haven't heard it either. I've just Googled the cover. It is charming.
It's like mid-century looking.
Yeah.
I'm obsessed with it.
Really digging the cover. But this, I mean, this one's definitely a chill read because the top blurb on the page is from People Magazine.
There you go. And here, here's the synopsis. The Jaws are moving up. For the past 30 years, their lives have been defined by cramped spaces and gossipy neighbors. But when Mr. Jaw comes into an enormous sum of money, the result of an unexpectedly successful internet venture, he moves his reluctant wife from their housing complex in East Delhi to the super rich side of town, ultimately forcing them and their son to reckon with who they are and what really matters to them. Hilarious and wise, the windfall illuminates with warmth and heart the precariousness of social status, the fragility of pride, and above all, the human drive to build and share a home. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
This sounds perfect.
It does.
And I'm like pissed that I haven't heard of it.
Yeah.
And I actually can't even remember where, how it came up. A local bookstagrammer. Oh gosh, I'll shout her out in the caption, but she posted about it and I was like, I have never heard of this book. This cover is gorgeous. I have to look it up. And does it not sound like the perfect combination of everything we're talking about today?
Yeah. I really love it. And I have to say, I've been reading the blurbs while you've been talking.
Yeah.
And they all sound, you know, it just sounds really charming.
Yeah, I just think this would be a really cute one. And I'm adding it, which is why I like when we do these kind of episodes, because it reminds me of what I have yet to read and what I could work on. Like, I do consider myself a reader, but I'm not a perfect reader and I need to do better at these sorts of things. And this has been added to my never-ending long list, which is called my TBR pile.
I love that you said you're not a perfect reader because there's no such thing.
Totally. Yes, yeah. I agree. But you know what I mean? Like, I tend towards the things that I'm most interested in. So I just like, I could get better at not doing that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm so excited to hear about this last one from you. You said you would, I very much need to read this one.
Yeah. So part of why I want you to read it is because I can't decide how I feel about it.
Okay.
It's The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo. And this is super embarrassing, but I finished Malibu Rising, like I was out on my walk. Yeah. I got to the pool the next morning. I realized I didn't have a book to read.
Oh.
So I just pulled up Libro FM.
Yeah.
And, you know, it had a list of like, if you liked this book, here's some more. And this is so on brand. I mean, like, I was a hot mess and didn't pay any attention. The first one that came up was The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo. And the cover is breathtaking. I mean, it's like this woman in this gorgeous green evening gown, you know, like, you know, how can you say no? So I downloaded it.
Yeah.
And then I realized that the reason it was the first recommendation is that it's by the same author.
Like, wow, they really got me.
So
I'm curious about this because two other people have told me that I have to read this book.
Oh, really?
And one of my friends said that she has never cried so hard, surprisingly. Like, she didn't expect to, and then she was crying.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not cry at all.
Okay.
Okay. So here's the setup. It's aging and reclusive Hollywood icon Evelyn Hugo reaches out to a magazine that, you know, has like a, it's like a highbrow, you know, not like, it's not People Magazine.
Yeah, not Us Weekly.
Yes. And says, you know, she wants to finally do an interview.
Okay.
They offer, you know, all their hotshot talent. And she says, no, I want Monique Grant.
Oh, she was Jackie Kennedying this.
Yes. And nobody knows why. And even Monique, she said, well, I don't know why I'm here. So it's really interesting to read two of an author's books back to back.
Right.
Taylor Jenkins Reid is really good at dialogue between characters and driving the plot through action, but also in a way that reveals a character's, you know, like motivation and thought process.
Sure, yeah.
And I really liked that. This book was good.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, if I hadn't read it in 2021, where we've, as you said, had this weird string of amazing books,
sure,
it would probably be one of my favorites.
Oh, wow.
It got a ton of praise. As you said, like, everybody loves it. The audio cast is outstanding. There's three narrator voices, and each of them, like, really captures the inherent qualities of the characters. But something about this book was just off for me. I think it is the pacing.
Okay.
Like, the last 75 to 100 pages, it's like the last 90 minutes of the audio, are so good you can't stop reading.
Wow.
Like, you have to know at that point, like, what's going on. So it's in these alternating timelines. And one is in the present where Monique is interviewing her to write her memoir. And the other is going, it starts in the past with in Hollywood where the studios, you worked for the studio. And
right.
And all of that up to the present day. The rest of the book, besides the last 100 page, it was enjoyable.
Yeah.
It just didn't have the urge for me that the last part had.
Yeah. Or that all of Malibu Rising did.
Right. And I really like the setup. I mean, it's a story of how homophobia and racism impacted the life of the characters and how Evelyn's bisexuality was the driver of her life's greatest friendship, her greatest love, but also her biggest regret and biggest heartbreak. And it is unflinching. Evelyn is a terrible person. Mm. And all of the characters are flawed.
Mm-hmm.
And you love them despite that, because of that. I'm not really sure. And I loved that it was historical fiction, but it's really diverse. But somewhere along the way, I just got a little bit bored.
Okay.
And at one point, I was like, how many husbands do we have left to go?
Wow.
I get it. I get it. You're bisexual. You were closeted. Your best friend was closeted. You were in fake marriage. Like, I get it. Which is terrible because, and so this is where it led to me, because I felt really conflicted. Because I was like, that is so dismissive, Jill. Like, what is your deal? Knock it off. It was just really hard for me because I really wanted to like it. And I was interested in the premise. I loved the characters.
Yeah.
But something about the pace for me was just really challenging. And so I'm just not really sure where to go for it.
Sure.
And I popped on Goodreads today. 86% of people have rated it either 5 or 4 stars.
Wow.
Clearly I'm in the minority here.
Sure.
And I liked it.
Yeah.
And it was good, but I didn't love it. And I'm sitting here like, I don't know, it's 3.8, 4.1, but somehow I feel bad for feeling that way because it also feels like it deserves more. Like, I'm just a mess and I need help.
Totally. And I didn't mean to immediately agree that you're a mess and you need help. That's not what I meant by totally.
Yes, you are.
Yes.
Thank you for
validating that fact.
Yeah.
No, I think that pace is hard. Like, if I'm not vibing with a book's pace, it is hard for me to see past that in what I like about it.
Yeah. And it was one of those things where literally everything else about it is likable and enjoyable.
And like totally your brand.
Yes.
Yeah.
The last two husbands, I was like, I bumped it up. I was listening at like 1.7 because I was like, let's get through these husbands.
Let's get through these husbands. That's the title of this podcast episode.
So, yeah, I just don't know where to go with it.
Well, and then
because it's not that I didn't like it.
Sure.
But I also didn't like it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Those books are always kind of escape me.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know where to place them in my brain.
I don't either. Yeah.
But what about this was chill for you?
I really loved the old Hollywood glamour. I loved her talking about going to movie premieres. Mm. And, you know, wardrobe and makeup and her life as a movie star was exciting.
Yeah.
And, you know, it has this almost Elizabeth Taylor vibe to it with, you know, how many times is she married? Like 8, I think.
True. Yeah. Spoiler alert. Our producer and I lived together in college and we had a framed photo of Elizabeth Taylor on our wall.
Nice.
When she passed.
It's got a really cool vibe and you're transported back and it's a part of history that you know happened. Like, we've heard all the stories about, like, Rock Hudson and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And it really personalizes it, and it shows you deeply how hurtful that era was. Yeah. And even as they moved into the modern era, it was this conflict between, if I become an activist, I'm drawing attention to myself. And so for her, she was like, I'm just going to funnel as much money into this as I can. But then also feeling conflicted, like, shouldn't I speak out?
Right.
And I really enjoyed all of those aspects of
it. Yeah, it sounds like it's truly the pacing.
It was really just pacing.
Yeah, I think it's fair.
Yeah.
I said, but having not read it.
It is engaging, and I'm not a huge historical fiction person, but this one was really fun.
Love it. I love to like it.
Yeah.
No, I am curious about this.
Okay, I didn't like it, and I loved it. There's the review.
My head is spinning. This has been delightful. This was another really good idea that I would not have thought about. And if COVID taught us anything, it's that the government's not going to help us. But it's also taught us that we have got to take care of ourselves. And that means, in terms of what we're able to offer people, it's... Listener, if you have any chill books that you feel like people are avoiding for no good reason... Please share it with us. We are at info@bookitpod.com. Follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok @BookitPod. Head to our website at bookitpod.com for even more bookish content. And we will have all of these books available on our bookshop affiliate link as well. And as you know, like Libra FM, Bookshop financially helps independent bookstores across the country. And I think they're kind of across out of America now too.
Yeah, they're definitely in the UK.
Yeah, so when we cross the pond, when we make it big time, you also be helping them. Just speaking a lot of things into existence tonight.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Jill, good to see you in person again.
Yes, you too.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Book It, a bi-weekly podcast where we talk frankly about books.
Book It is available across podcast platforms.
Subscribe to never miss an episode, and don't forget to leave a review before you go.
We'd love to stay in touch. You can find us online at bookitpod.com or on Instagram and Twitter @bookitpod.
Want to read something you heard on today's episode? Visit us at bookshop.org/shop/bookitpod.
Book It was created by hosts Jill Burkett-Ragacy and Michael Woodson, with sound design and production by Madeline Call at Honeysuckler.